And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast. The prequel trilogy is over, and millions of fans are left without Star Wars. Enter a brave group of Jedi, led by Dave Filoni, who brought tales of the Jedi, clone armies, and Mandalorians to Cartoon Network, thus keeping hope alive in the galaxy. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi!
Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. In this episode, as Ahsoka and her youngling allies struggle to evade the Trandoshan hunters, their efforts receive an unexpected boost when a new captive, Chewbacca the Wookiee, arrives. There will be... That's me trying to do a Wookiee impression.
Better than me.
We're talking about Wookiee Hunt this week. How you doing, Chris?
I'm doing good.
I'm doing alright too, except for I have a cat licking my arm.
Since the last time we recorded, I had some nasty malware on my computer and I've gotten it fixed, so I'm a happy camper.
Since the last time we talked, I saw Wonder Woman and it was fantastic.
I liked it a lot. I saw it too.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to listen to you guys' 5-Minute Freaks on it.
I didn't get as hyperbolic as it as a lot of the reviews did, but it has to be my favorite of the DC, DC movies since the Dark Knight movies. I like it better than those.
So. I thought it was very much on par with, like, early origin Marvel movies, like Gen 1 Marvel movies, yeah. Like Captain America or, like, Thor.
It was very much like Captain America, you know.
Yeah, but it was, like, as like on storytelling and stuff like that, it was very much on par. I cried through the ending, but I only cried just because Diana's whole thing was a very core belief that I believe, and it was just so nice to hear it. If I had any criticisms of Wonder Woman, I'm gonna be a big hypocrite because I'm gonna follow this up with a huge but. I thought this pacing was kind of slow, but it was good for Diana's character because there were a lot of battles throughout the movie. But like the first battle was like her dipping her toes into the new world, and the next one was like her dipping her knee in, and then the next one was her like dipping her like leg in, and then the last one was her cannonballing into Ares. So while the pacing was really slow, it was good for Diana's character because it let her progress little by little into this new world. So I really enjoyed that aspect of it.
The pacing and the tone are a little uneven, and it could have used a little trimming down. It was a little long. But otherwise it was really well written and well acted, and it didn't take itself too seriously, but all the actors and actresses were committed at the same time. So
yeah.
It wasn't all the themes of Wonder Woman, you know, and the people like, oh, this is going to be a feminist movie. Oh, this is going to be this kind of movie. All that stuff's already baked into Superman into Wonder Woman. So, sort of, if they just keep to the Wonder Woman story and the Amazon ideals and all that, it's going to have all that stuff in there without having to force it, you know? And it didn't do that.
Yeah.
It was very much a superhero movie, you know? It was true to the spirit of a superhero movie. And they sidestepped any of the politics and social stuff in there without taking it out, you know what I mean? Without,
yeah,
like making it into a bland sort of movie. The only thing that I think is a little weird for it is it's at the same time it's a great movie for little girls. It's a really violent movie for little girls, you know. Gene was asking about
I
like
love
his
boys too.
He was at for any little kid, there's a lot of killing in the movie, and there's even an offhand like person shooting another person in a in the face, you know. And it's all, like, off-screen and not gory and graphic, but lots of people get killed.
Yeah.
And,
go ahead.
Yeah, it's, so I guess people have to judge by that, but then again, you know, I mean, lots of people get killed in a lot of movies.
Something that I really enjoyed about it, though, and this is just, like, one of my favorite things, like, in, like, media and stuff like that, especially with female characters, is when, like, female characters support other female characters, and they, like, root each other on, and then you have people, like, rooting on, like, the women characters and stuff. And, like, of course everybody had that for Diana, but what I found really interesting was the villains did it, too. Like, the German general guy, like, went to the poison lady, and he was like, I know you can do this, you're so smart! And I was like, oh my god! Even the villains are rooting for the ladies in this! This is awesome! And so, like, everybody, like, you know, like, Wonder Woman and Edo are, like, rooting each other on, and then, like, the male villain was, like, rooting on the female villain, and I was just like, this is awesome! Like, root on all the ladies, even though she's evil and killing people! So...
Well, you know, I mean, there's gonna be feminist discussion on this movie at the whole time, but it's set during World War One, so mm-hmm. you know, there's that they're operating on the attitudes of the time, but where like Poison Lady and Wonder Woman have to sort of prove themselves in the world of men by being over and above the men around them, you know. So then the other guys who are like, you know. I mean, the general with Poison Lady might have still been a sexist pig, but he was like, hey, I'm smart enough to respect, you know, to acknowledge that this person kicks ass, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They have to reach a certain, like, high level of of kick-assedness in order to get that, like, grudging respect from the... Well, it's not even... A lot of the respect isn't even grudging respect, and, I mean... Yeah, Steve Trevor, you know, figures out pretty much very quickly that Wonder Woman isn't somebody he has to protect, and pretty quickly goes into treating her as an equal and utilizing her as a fighter, you know.
Yeah.
An ally.
Like, if I had like any other complaints, I also wish we had a little bit more about the Poison Lady. Other than she's just like the evil chemist of the Germans.
I thought she and Steve Trevor's Girl Friday were kind of underdeveloped as
yeah.
characters. I seem to have this feeling that maybe a few of their scenes got put on the cutting room floor. You know, I have a feeling that they might have been in there a little more. But I liked her. I liked the way that they wrote her character. She wasn't supernatural. She wasn't super powered. She was just. Yeah, she was twisted. She might not have been evil as much as she'd been like horribly traumatized or whatever. But you know, yeah, it was.
You know who she actually kind of reminded me of? I can't remember the historical figure's name, but they touched on him in an episode of Timeless. Where he was a German guy who pretty much created this massive bomb. And the thing is that they were working with Ian Fleming, who wrote the James Bond novels, who was actually a spy in World War II, for reals. And they were working with Ian Fleming, and he was just like, that monster, they're like, we need to stop that monster. Like, he's bombed the shit out of London. And, like, they're sitting here going, well, we also have to save him because... the U.S. is going to take him, and he's going to jumpstart our space race program. And they're like, well, his terrible things doesn't out, you know, take away the fact that he's going to help us in the future. We need to stop him now. And it was that's kind of what she sort of reminded me of. Like, you know, this character that, like, she doesn't really care who she works for as long as she gets to do her work.
Right, right.
And because that's when they talked to the German rocket person at the end of the Timeless episode. He was just like... I don't care if it's Germany or the U.S. I just want to send
rockets. Was it Werner von Braun?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, von Braun.
Yeah, he was just like, I don't care who I work with.
Father of our space program.
Yeah, he was like, I don't care who I work with as long as I send a rocket into space. I don't care if I'm bombing anybody or just doing work. So, but the other thing I thought that was cool, and then we can get back to Star Wars, was... they really another very core thing. Okay, because the whole like point of the thing is like, you know... You could either, like, hold these grudges, but it's, like, really about what you believe in. And, like, you know, she believed in people and she believed in love. But we saw a lot of that in the supporting cast. Like, Cheap was talking about how he had pretty much every reason he could judge Steve Trevor based on America and what America did to the Indians. But he was just like, no, I know Steve one-on-one. Like, he's a good guy. He's not, doesn't represent his people. And, like, you know, and Sammy was the same way. He was like, I wanted to be an actor, but I'm not the right color. So, but it still doesn't mean I can't, like, act to help people out, you know?
Right.
And so I thought that was, like, really cool how they really approach these, like, really big social issues, but on a human level. And I really think that's something we need. Like, you know, for example, we could be judging a whole race of people off of recent events, but off, like, the, you know, like, single people here and there that are outside their, like, what they are. Or we could get to know these people, befriend them, and, like, you know, see them as people. The weapon we have is love. So I just thought it was cool how they kind of address these, like, really big issues, but on, like, a human level.
And without, yeah, they, and they worked it out without
being preachy
about it. Without,
like, being, like, over the face with it. Like, Chief could have been like, well, let me tell you the history of the Trail of Tears.
Yeah, no, they just did it, they did it in one little offhand line. And it was also, and that line also said what you just said, and it also said something about, like, how things aren't as black and white, you know?
Yeah,
you know, Steve Trevor's a good guy, but the good guy also took our land, you know?
Yeah, and, like, I think that's what helped Diana so much, because in the beginning she was thinking in very black and white, but then she's like, you know, for example, the Scottish guy who was the sniper, like, she was just like, you're a murderer, but then when she saw him having PTSD, she was just like, okay, it's not so black and white, you know, he doesn't enjoy just because he's good at sniping doesn't mean he enjoys it. You know, he's clearly suffering from PTSD, and it doesn't mean he actually likes his job just because he's good at it. You know, it doesn't make, he's not a murderer because he wants to be. He's,
well, they
a murderer
were all doing it out of necessity. They were all doing it because they had to, just like her. You know, and that was, they were all following the same rationale that she gave her mother when she was leaving, you know, so, yeah, so that's why they fell in together.
Which is a very Star Wars thing. Everything's not black and white, and we have gray Jedis and shit.
Well, we're going to another kick-ass woman, girl story today.
Yeah, so it's kind of fun that we opened with Wonder Woman. So we want to get started with the episode and talk about some Wookiees.
I'm ready.
All right, so Wookiee Hunt is the 66th episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars, and it aired on April 1st, 2011. It is the Season 3 finale! So we have three seasons in the book! Woo! It was written by Bonnie Mark and directed by Dave Filoni. Some extra episode information for you. Suki and Serapis, who made their first appearance in the episode Bounty Hunters, pop up again in this episode to help out the Wookiees. In the episode featurette, Dave Filoni says, Wookiee Hunt brings us to the end of Season 3. It is the final part of the story where Ahsoka fights her way off this island. Who better to come to the aid of this Padawan than the very famous Chewbacca the Wookiee? During the course of the story, we had a moment where the Wookiees arrived to save the day. As we moved into the design of it, Killian Plunkett and I kept talking about, well, how do the Wookiees get to this moon? What do they travel in? It felt very strange that the Wookiees would have these kind of deep space travel vehicles. I know they had built this kind of pod that Yoda travels in Revenge of the Sith, but nothing quite fit what they would have. Nothing quite fit that they would have something the size of a Rebel blockade runner, or even a shuttle. It seemed to be the beginning. It seemed to be against their culture to have something that progressive that they were traveling off-world at the time. It makes more sense that the Wookiees would hire somebody. George came up with this idea that the Wookiees have these people that they're friendly with, and they can get around from place to place. So I suggested, why don't we bring back Suki and Serapis from Bounty Hunters? Suki has this awesome ship called the Halo, and in Bounty Hunters, it doesn't go anywhere. It doesn't do anything. It sits in the hangar. I thought this would be a great way to get the Halo flying. So we had to extend the cargo bay of the Halo. There really wasn't one before, and it had to carry all these Wookiees around suddenly. We had to revamp the model, redress it, and redesign it. Also, I noticed on Suki's ship that she has, like, a little Tuca doll, which is a little rabbit doll that we saw in Ryloth, and the Tuca dolls keep popping up in Rebels. But the thing with the Tuca doll on her ship, it had this big bloody knife in its hand. I saw it. I was like, Sugi, you have a bloody Tuki doll on the side of your ship, and I love it. Oh, it was so cute. I was just like, oh, look at the Tuki doll with the massive knife in its hand with blood on it. It has, like, green blood on this knife. It was really cool. It was, like, graffiti on her ship. Well, we had to revamp, remodel, and dress it. We had to bring Sugi and Cerebus back to the show. I thought it would make a fun little cameo, and here they showed Sugi scene talking with the Wookiee general. There's something about that moment that feels very Star Wars. Here's this fantastic world, and these Wookiee soldiers coming, and they've hired this galactic taxi cab. She complains about something mundane, like, you better be quick, I'm charging by the minute. Meanwhile, we've been on this journey with Ahsoka and Chewie, and we need to get them off this out of here. And Suki's worried about the fair. It just feels to me authentic. It just feels to me that this is a bit of our world, but it's so galactically out there that it reminds me of Star Wars. It's only one shot that we see Sugi in, but it's one of my favorite moments of the whole episode when the Wookiees arrive with the bounty hunters to save the day.
You know who else likes to come and save the day?
I have a kitty in my lap. Do you know who also likes to pet some pussies?
Oh.
The other day, I was petting Spokes with one hand, and I was petting Carmel with the other hand, and my stepmom came over to say goodnight, and she was like, oh, look at the kitties, and I'm like, yeah, I'm double-fisting some pussies. My stepmom thought it was really funny, because I was petting both my cats. Have you ever seen that, like, scene from Scrubs, where they're like, we're losing him! Get the emergency kittens! And they come over with a box of kittens and just dump it on a guy, and he's all just like, hey! Kitty!
No.
Oh, man, it's a funny little scene, but that would be me. And I did see the best decal. You know how people have those, like, stick figure decals on the back of their cars?
Uh-huh.
It was one, and the woman was just, like, had this happy face with her hands, like, on her cheeks, and all across the bottom of the car were just cats. Like, cats on a scratching post, cats in a box, cats in a litter box, like, cats playing with toys. I'm like, I almost followed this woman. I was on my way to work, but I was just like, turn into the mall parking lot. Turn. Damn it, because I really wanted to ask her where she got her car decal, because that's so me.
You were just trying to get her cats.
No, I already have the best kitties in the world. They're the greatest kitties in the world. Work, work, Spokes. Carmilla, my kitties. The kitty sisters. Anyway, so hi, Yoda.
Oh.
Sorry, I had to sing and talk about my cats. So, how are you doing this week, Yoda?
Better.
Better?
Better get a bucket. Yoda's gonna puke.
Oh,
Monty
no.
Python joke.
Yoda would like Monty Python.
Mm-hmm.
We have to see Yoda in this episode, even though he didn't say anything. Alright, so, time for this sexy space platitude of the day.
A great student is what the teacher hopes to be. In bed! Run, Luke, run!
This is sort of like... Oh, not nearly as bad as the Bubba Fett one about, like, I hope to be my dad in bed, but it's up there.
Yeah, this one gets creepier with the in bed on it. This one actually makes sense to the episode for once. This one fits into the episode just fine, I guess.
Yeah.
Just fine, I guess.
If it didn't have the ending, it would be not as fitting. But because of the ending of the episode with Anakin and Ahsoka, it's
right.
Really fitting. And then you add an embed on it, and it's just skeevy.
Yeah, that's where it gets skeezy. Yeah.
Skeezy, sleazy, Spokes. Can I put you down because you're really hot? No. So you pick her up and she just clawed in. So, all right. Well, Act 1?
Act 1, I'm ready.
Oh, me too, man. Me too. To catch you up from last week, Ahsoka got kidnapped by Trandoshans, by a Trandoshan who we named Lizard Prime. She got tossed on an island where they hunt people for sport. She met up with some other Jedi younglings named Omir, Jinx, and Khalifa, who have been on the run for a long time and just barely surviving. Ahsoka goes, yeah, that's really dumb, guys, and it inspires them to fight back But I can't read tonight, oh my god. It inspires them to fight back, but their leader, Khalifa, was killed in the process. Also, Lizard Prime's son, Snakelet, died too. And now Ahsoka must get them off the island alive. Oh, and Anakin's freaking the hell out because his Padawan's missing. To this week now! We start with Ahsoka fleeing through the jungle away from Lizard Prime, who is still mourning the loss of his killer son. But we couldn't care less. You hunt people, and karma will hunt you back. One of Lizard Prime's goons is tailing Ahsoka, and she hides under a vine. A Prime shows up to pick up his goon, and Ahsoka slips away from them. Ahsoka returns to their base, and Omer and Jinx are understandably upset that their friend Khalifa is dead. Morale is low, and everyone's mourning. Ahsoka is angry at the loss and says, "You know what? If we die, I'm going down fighting with my boots on. Screw those walking alligator purses. Every few days, they drop off new prisoners. We attack that ship when they least expect it. Who is with me?" And Jinx and Omer are like, "Well, it's better than being gunned down while we're running away. I guess we're in." They head to the beach and they see the ship coming in. They Jedi parkour up to the ship and Ahsoka lands on the windshield. Jinx and Omer take on the lizard who comes out to fight them. Ahsoka heads for the pilot. Her fight with him damages the ship, the ship's piloting, and fries it. She throws the lizard through the windshield, and Ahsoka releases the prisoners and escapes from the ship just before it crashes. Across the beach, they hear a familiar sound that every Star Wars fan knows. They hear a Wookiee! And out of the wreckage, Chewbacca strolls up to them like, "Hey guys, what's up? What'd you think of Act 1, Chris?"
Well, I guess at this point, you don't have to assume it's Chewbacca.
That's true. Because even then, like, they don't get his name until, like, a little bit later. But,
It looks like Chewbacca, though.
It
has to be Chewbacca, though, because if it wasn't going to be Chewbacca, they would have given him some little twist other than the bandolier or something like that.
Yeah, or made his fur a different color.
I love, love, love this episode. I have very little notes on it. My biggest note on this first part is once again, the use of colors is really good in this. And if you notice in the last episode, it was a lot brighter. You know, it was like bright greens and forest browns and stuff like that. And this one, it's like darker and mistier and like full of...
Pretty much until the final scene, it's almost every shot is a nighttime shot except like for like the
misty
nighttime
day shot. With creepy gray mist and lots of like blue gray and like dark murky green that looks kind of, you know, like almost like poison gas looking green. So the place takes on a whole, you know, it looked like just a thick jungle during the day, but at night it takes on a really sinister look to it. And I love how they do that with these episodes, to give each episode almost its own little feel and look.
It's and a little
it's
like
totally in play in this one.
Yeah,
I really like this. I like this is that they just basically jump right into what they, you know, I mean, but basically by the end of the last episode is when everybody figured out, you know, we've got to take an aggressive stance on this whole situation. And I like with this, they just start off doing it, you know. Mm-hmm. And even with the loss of their former leader, or the person who'd been there the longest, the other kids, you know, they're freaked out at first, but then, you know, they go from freaked out to like, let's get aggressive.
I know you haven't seen Hunger Games, but it kind of takes a Hunger Games approach of like, well, if we don't, we die. Let's go.
Right. You know.
What was your first initial reaction to Chewbacca showing up in Clone Wars?
This is my only quibble with this whole show, this episode, is, and it's even a tiny quibble, is it really, does it have to be Chewbacca? I mean, it's enough odds that he shows up in episode 3 and he knows Yoda and all that, but you can sort of write it off as, you know, Chewbacca's a great warrior or whatever.
You can also argue that because of this muting is the reason he knows Yoda in episode 3.
Maybe, yeah.
Like, that could have been his first time, because Yoda was in that final scene meeting them all at the dock, so maybe, like, that was his first time meeting Yoda. And same thing with General Truffle of the Wookiee general that shows up, too, because he's in episode 3 as well. So, But there's nothing to back it up, though. Like,
Thinking about planets and races, you know?
I mean,
say you were an alien, and you just kept running into the same human everywhere. What would the odds be of that, you know, the same human keeps popping up? It's just like, oh, hey, I know that guy. You know,
me,
oh, yeah, he's from Earth. Oh, that's why you know him. He's from Earth, you know? It's like, how many Wookiees are there? And... you know, and then you start getting into, like, okay, so Chewbacca's, and this is me just super nitpicking this, but you got Chewbacca, and here he is, and he's one step away now from Anakin. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he was one step away from Anakin anyway by knowing Yoda, but here's another, Chewbacca's not only been with Han Solo and Luke Skywalker and hung out with all those guys, and... was there, you know, like, Chewie's like the Forrest Gump of Star Wars. He gets to turn up where everything's happening, you know?
Life's like a box of chocolate. You never know what you're going to...
Yeah, life's like a big box of animal guts.
My only thing about it is I keep just thinking about The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi, and God, Chewbacca must be hella old.
Well, I mean, he's in the when Star Wars originally came out, every time you saw a description of Chewbacca, it was Chewbacca, the 200-year-old Wookiee. So by Star Wars, he's 200 years old.
Yeah.
So yeah, Wookiees, I guess, have a pretty long lifespan.
So he can only be like, you know...
But it's a big galaxy. A galaxy is so huge, you know. Planets are so huge. And just when you start, like... I mean, you could have made... It's getting into that edge of fan service where it's like... if they had another Wookiee that was a little different than Chewbacca but was still a kick-ass Wookiee...
Like, I would rather it be switched with, like, Captain Tuffle. Like, that's who they find. And then, like, maybe, like, Chewbacca comes to rescue them. But at least, like, then...
Yeah, at the end, it's like, yeah, this is my Commander Chewie or whatever. Yeah, and just have it be a little tangential thing. And also, once you have Chewbacca in there, you know he ain't gonna die.
Yeah.
That's not, you know, in the cards for Chewbacca, so... if he made it a random Wookiee, you could have been like, oh, you know, they could have him tragically die or not, or, you know, there'd be a little more mystery as to, and suspense as to what could happen to him. But that's a minor quibble, because I don't care, because I love Chewie.
Yeah.
And my first thought when they saw Chewbacca, that, you know, they're like, oh, we gotta release the prisoners, and the ship crashed, and, like, Chewbacca comes out, and I'm like, oh man, Chewie's gonna be pissed because they just killed all the other Wookiees, and he's the only other one, you know. But it turns out Chewie was the only one on the ship, so that takes care of that problem.
Yeah. So.
But that's really all the notes I have. And, I mean, it's a minor quibble that it's Chewie. It's just sort of like, okay, but then,
I get that. It's one thing because if it's random, because this is random, and they keep we keep randomly running into Chewie throughout, like, this and episode 3 and stuff. It's another thing if it's, say, like, someone like Agent Callus in Rebels. He's purposely hunting the Rebels, so it makes sense that he keeps showing up, because he's purposely hunting them.
Well, he's a character they made up specifically for that show, too, so he's integrated into the show. So when you know...
It's kind of like, oh, it's like the two Tatooine bar guys... that show up in Rogue One, and they, like, have to leave literally 5 minutes or they're going to get blown up on the planet.
Right. The like Rogue that, One like, guys, I mean, in all the, it happens when you introduce anybody. Like, in Rebels, you got, you know, once you start adding it all up, everybody's been hanging around with the same group of people, you know?
Yeah, it kind
so
of
it's
like
oh yeah, well, oh yeah, like so if like Luke Skywalker sat down and talked with Lando long enough, he'd be like, oh, okay, so you've met Ahsoka Tano, you know? She used to work with my father, you know, that sort of thing. It's like
or something even more detrimental, Lando could be like, oh, I met two Jedis on Lothal.
Right, right.
Because, like, and that was kind of, like, that's how I felt about the Lando episode, like, in season one. And, like, well, yes, I love Lando, and I love his character and stuff like that. But for it to be Lando, who has a fucking farm on Lothal that he's, like, selling business out of all places, I'm like, why aren't you on Cloud City? Like, you know, and, like,
well,
you're
Cloud
right,
City he'd only
that.
Had for a little while in Empire Strikes Back, you know, yeah. And he won that also, you know, so it's
yeah,
like,
but it's like one of those things, like, I never thought about it until you just said it, like, well, like, Lando could sit down with Luke and be like, yeah, I met two Jedi on Lothal, their names are Kanan and Ezra, you should go talk to them.
Yeah.
I never thought about that.
You know, that's the problem you start getting into. When you start having all these characters know each other and meet each other at different points, it's like, you know, it's like, how many people are there in the galaxy? Is there only like 300 people in the galaxy all intermingling with each other? And, you know, so. But, minor quibble, because it kicks ass to have Chewie in this. It brings it into a whole other level of different story. Because I actually, like, with Ahsoka's character stuff happening in that, I mean, we don't see it as much. We do see it in the last episode, but they sort of state the purpose. They get the point across in the last episode. So, like, all that's left in this episode is to see how they resolve it. And throwing
yeah.
Chewie in the mix makes the resolution of this just so much more fun and rewarding.
Because they pretty much found a walking fur tank.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, uh-huh. Well, yeah, now it's a little bit of pick on someone your own size sort of thing, you know.
Yeah.
These lizard guys are pretty tough. Notice they didn't get a full-grown Jedi, though. They got themselves a kid Jedi, you know.
Yeah.
And they took the lightsaber away. So they're turds. And so, yeah, Chewbacca can pick them up over his head and throw them, so it makes it all that much better. And Chewbacca will pick them up over his head and throw them with glee. So,
yeah.
So I was quite excited to see Chewie added to the mix. I don't care if it's fanboyish or whatever. I was just like, oh yes, here we go.
Yeah. The only other notes I have is I really like the fight that the Jedi have on top of the dropship.
Yeah.
They don't have their lightsabers, so they only have the Force to rely on. And it kind of reminded me of the fight between the son and the daughter in the Mortis arc. But here I liked it so much more because it was more of like a practical fight and like very much more life and death than these like, you know, superb beings throwing each other around.
Yeah.
Like these stakes are way higher.
And
so,
they
like,
all they're based like Ahsoka's choosing in the ship. She's like, well, she's not choosing. She's basically like they wanted to get that ship and get out of there. But at that point, in order to save her life, she's basically got to take the ship down because this guy's just firing wildly on the bridge.
Yeah.
And whether he's shooting at her or not, he's taking out control panels and stuff. So she's just like goes with it, you know, and has
yeah.
him shooting up the hole inside. It's very realistic as how that would go on.
Yeah, and I just like them using their Jedi skills without the lightsaber. That's something we don't really actually see a lot. Like, you know, it's not very often that the Jedi are like, I don't have my lightsaber, let me fight with the Force.
And you're also seeing these kids, you know, they haven't been trained in a while, but now that they're actually fighting the lizard guys instead of running from them, they're starting to pick up tactics. They're starting to pick up ways of fighting them and working together and using tactics to at least fight them to a standstill, you know. One of
yeah.
them will jump on the back while the other one takes out their legs and messes around with them, and then that one will jump off their back, and then the other one will start messing with them, and...
Or, like, one will jump up, and the other Jedi will, like, throw them into the lizard mm-hmm. people so they kick harder.
Yep, yep. So they're... not only are they're developing their, you know, they're getting their Jedi, their chops back, you know, and it's neat to see. And it's, and you could tell the episodes that Dave Filoni directs are extra good. They're extra Star Warsy, and they have that extra attention to detail. Not just the detail, but the details that make it Star Warsy, and that you don't even really notice until you start talking about them like this. Of, you know, it's just a battle scene, but you've seen these kids go from like running away and hiding to now they're starting to, and they're not extremely proficient at it, but they're getting better, you know, each time they're fighting one of these guys.
Yeah, that's probably one of my favorite parts of the episode too. I also really just like Chewbacca's Clone Wars design. I remember recently in the Rebels episode when they brought in the Wookiees in the very first episode, I really didn't like their design. It was really cartoonish.
Yeah, but the Wookiees and Yoda turned out very cartoonish in Clone Wars.
But
or in Rebels, I mean.
Yeah, but I really like the Clone Wars design because it's far more detailed and it looks a lot more like the actual Clone Wars design or the, like the real life design.
Yeah.
And the other only, just something we talked about last week, I just want to note it again. I just like seeing Ahsoka stepping up into this leadership role. I think it's a really good moment for her, especially in the void that Khalifa left. And the other thing is, it's a very small design note, but I like how they've dirtied up Ahsoka and the other Jedi over the time. A lot of times in TVs and movies, when they quote-unquote dirty up an actor, they'll put like a little smudge of mud on them. But Ahsoka and the Jedi in this episode actually look dirty. Like, their clothes are filthy, they have crap all over their face.
That's another Star Wars detail, you know? And all the lizard people's, all the Transdotians stuff, you know, their jeeps and their base is all beat up and, you know, it's been used.
Lifted.
It's hunter stuff. It's scratched up and dented up and painted up and used.
It looks like it's been lived in.
Yes, everything on this planet is lived in and beat up, and that makes it very Star Wars. Especially in the prequel era stories where things are a little cleaner, you know, the visual aesthetic of it is a little more cleaner and brighter than the original trilogy. So this gets a little bit of that original trilogy feel of like, yeah, you know, they're little floating jeep platforms. You know, look partially like a jeep, a four-wheeler, you know, ATV, and like a lawnmower all built it. You know, it's very functional looking. It's great.
I mean, and something as small as like, you know, like Sugi having that that graffiti on her ship. Like,
yes.
It makes it look lived in.
And they have have the same sort of graffiti on their ship, or on their stuff too, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, it's just like such a small little detail, but it really helps sells the episode.
Yep, it's that Filoni Star Wars detail.
Mm-hmm.
Gotta love it.
But that's all I have for Act 1. Did you have anything else?
Nope, I'm ready for Act 2.
Alright, so Act 2. The next morning on the beach, the lizards are pretty pissed off that their ship got broken by a group of youths. Back at the Jedi base camp, Ahsoka gets information from Chewbacca. No one knows that he's been taken, but his homeworld is very close. He could contact them. Jinx is all down on that plan since they don't have a cell phone or anything laying around. Chewbacca says he can build a transmitter from the wreck on the beach. Omir is like, well, it's better than sitting around playing poker. Let's do it. And Jinx is like, ugh, this is a stupid plan, but it's better than dying, so I'm in. They head back to the beach. Ahsoka and Chewie go to the crash while the other two stand watch. Some lizards show up on patrol, and they leave one sniper there to guard the ship. Unaware of the danger, Ahsoka and Chewbacca get the parts they need and head outside. Luckily, Jinx and Omir jump the sniper before he can shoot Ahsoka. The younglings fight the sniper, but he overwhelms them. Chewbacca jumps into the action and takes the sniper as their prisoner. Back at their camp, Chewie is having problems getting the transmitter running. Jinx is out of fucks to give and wants to interrogate the sniper. Omir outvotes Ahsoka and he wants to act while they can. Jinx proposes using the prisoner as bait, take one of the lizard space jeeps and take out their base with the element of surprise. Jinx is like, play Wookiee babysitter if you want, Ahsoka. We're leaving in the morning. Ahsoka has no choice but to go with them, but she still needs Chewie's help. He agrees to go with them, too. Yeah, I guess that's the end of Act 2, because everything else from here on out is the actual fight to the end.
Yeah, yeah, it's hard. As we were saying before we started recording, this one was really hard for me to tell where the acts ended and began, as in so much as usually it's designated by a commercial break. It's yeah. very hard to tell where the commercial breaks were in this, if at all, so I was just sort of winging it. But yeah, this is, and it's a weird, it's a sort of short middle act, but yeah, it's pretty much a big fight after this. There were two movie references. I don't know if they were purposeful movie references, but they evoke two different movies, Die Hard and E.T. Both got, all I could think of when they were like, they have a Wookiee now, it was in Die Hard when he got the machine, you know, they open up the elevator and they see the dead terrorist guy in there and he's got a sign around his neck saying, ho, 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 I have a machine gun now. And then the E.T., the whole E.T. phone home thing where he's like, oh, I'll make a little transmitter and call my friends, you know, I'll, you know, put this together from parts. And my only other note is another Dave Filoni type Star Wars, just little touch that is just a little thing, but it's just great, you know. It just adds that extra layer of realism, is when Ahsoka and Chewie are first climbing into the ship, which is at an angle. Chewie sort of just slips and falls in. He just sort of hits an angle. It's like, whoop, 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 whoop. It like falls in and then just, you know. It's sort of in the background. They're in the back of the frame, you know, coming in through a little hole. And it's just a little touch. And that's the kind of thing that if they were filming the movie, like the actor accidentally fell and just kept going. And they were like, hey, let's leave that in there. But it's not. It's a CGI show, so everything is planned and plotted. So it was, you could tell probably Filoni was like, let's have just something like, you know, Chewie slips a little bit there and catches himself and gets up because the ship's at an angle. And it just, you don't have, and that's the thing about Star Wars. A lot of one of the elements that makes Star Wars great is you don't have to add that stuff in. You don't have to have it in there for the story or the movie or anything, but when you put that extra little bit of thought into it and add those little details, it just subliminally makes it that much better. So I really liked that. It's as if Clone Wars is just getting more cinematic, like as time goes on, and you know, more and more like cinematic Star Wars, and awesome.
Yeah. I didn't really have a lot of notes for this scene either. Something I actually just realized as I was reading the scene was, compared to last, you know, this happens a lot in Star Wars, well, then you have the main plot, and then they'll have kind of like a B plot that they will literally dedicate like maybe 15 seconds of someone just being like, blah, 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 and then it goes back to the main plot. There's none of that in this episode, because, like, last week we kept flashing back to Anakin. Like, you know, how is Anakin reacting to this? And he has a little mini-scene. He's looking. He tells Rex to go find Anakin. And then Plo Koon shows up. Until the end, there's no other B-plots. This is one straight plot the whole way through. And that doesn't happen a lot in Clone Wars. Because I know a lot of times we grumble about that. You know, like, we wish they would leave out these little scenes and dedicate more to the main plot. Filoni did that this episode, and I just realized it as I was reading it.
Yeah, there is, and I mean, you couldn't even really call it a B-plot as much as little bookends, you know?
Yeah, but the only real notes I have for the scene, for this act, is I actually really ended up liking the character of Jinx a lot, the Twilight Boy. He seems like he could be very easily overbearing and annoying, but it really makes sense for him. I think Khalifa's death last episode was his wake-up call. It was that wake-up call, if they don't do shit, they're going to die. And I think he's tired of being passive and, like, pussyfooting around, and he just wants to get off this island now, and he's willing to be a little bit snippy and brutal to do it. And I kind of like seeing him kind of like even stepping up in against Ahsoka a little bit, because he's just like, I'm tired of sitting. I've sat for years. Like, you know, we're not dying anymore. I want to go. I want to go attack them. Let's go. Let's do this. And I really ended up liking him a lot because it makes sense for someone who's been there as long as he is. He's just ready to go.
Yeah.
So he doesn't even like want to like wait.
A little bit crazy.
But I don't blame him though.
Like, no, of course not.
Yeah.
Stress. So. It's PTSD. It's stress. You know.
Yeah. So I actually ended up really liking him a lot. I think I remember like the first time I watched it, he was annoying. But like on the second viewing, I was just like, okay, I totally get why you're so upset. You're ready to get out of here. And my only other note is Ahsoka is actually reminding me a lot of Anakin when it comes to the scenes with Jinx and Omir outvoting her. Anakin, as a leader, we've seen, is really good at listening to his men. He often asks Rex or the other clones or other Jedi for their advice in situations, even if he doesn't always agree with them. And when we've seen before that when Anakin sometimes gets outvoted, he'll go through with a plan because he trusts his men. And that's the exact same that Ahsoka's doing right now. Like, she gets outvoted, and she was like, okay, wait, I gotta go. I have to roll. I have to go with it. So, and that's just part of her teaching that Anakin gave her. So it was so cool to see, like, how much she's starting to, like, step into Anakin's role more and more with these younglings.
Yep, and it's rubbing off on him.
Yeah, it really is. So, but that's really all I had for Act 2. It was kind of the shortest of the acts. All my notes are in Act 3.
Well, like I said, this one is a big it's an action episode, so it's not as much to take notes on a lot of times as normal episodes.
Yeah.
Besides, so, this was cool. Well, yeah. I don't know. It looks like you got a fair amount of notes on this third act. Okay, interesting. Yeah,
all my notes are in Act 3. So, well, Act 3.
Let's do it.
Let's do it. Let's polish off this baby.
Let's do this.
Do it. Do it. All right. Act 3. The next day on the beach, the Jedi and Chewie gather together to put their plan into action. Jinx uses the Jedi mind trick on Sniper to get him to cooperate with them. Sniper calls a space jeep to come get him. The space jeep arrives, and the Jedi with Chewbacca easily take it for their own. We see a quick snippet that Chewie gets his transmitter working and it starts sending out messages. The Jedi and Chewie arrive on the lizard base. Omir uses the space jeep to shoot from the sky while the others fight on the ground. The lizard's reinforcements pour out of the base. The Jedi are doing everything from throwing space jeeps at lizards, and Jink even learns Ahsoka's trick to deflect blasters with the Force. Omir shooting down from the sky until Lizard Prime gets a big gun and shoots him down. All of our heroes are surrounded. Lizard Prime is all like, "Oh, that was cute, but it's time for you to die in the name of my son, Snakelet." And then suddenly, "It's raining Wookiees! Hallelujah, it's raining Wookiees! A-da-da-da!" Alright, because Chewbacca's message got through. Wookiee General Tarful arrives on his ship of bounty hunters with Suki and Serapis from the episode Bounty Hunters to save the day. And the fight is back on. Lizards are being shot down and thrown over railings and off the airship. And the tide turns for our heroes. Lizard Prime is like, "Well, fuck all of this." And he runs back into his ship. Ahsoka is like, "Nope. Sorry, bro," and chases after him. She enters Prime's lair, and he's not anywhere to be found. She sneaks around, and Lizard Prime jumps at her with an axe, and they kung fu fight. And they're pretty evenly matched. Lizard Prime is stronger, but Ahsoka is faster and rolling constant natural 20s for dexterity. She finally gets him down, and Prime is all like, "You killed my son!" And Ahsoka is like, "Excuse me, I defended myself. He got himself killed because of your actions." He reaches for his blaster. Ahsoka has no choice but to force throw him out the door. Lizard Prime falls over the balcony and plummets to his death. The Jedi and the Wookiees have won the day. They arrive back on Coruscant, and Anakin is like, "Oh my god, you're okay! I can now call off prayer circles and search parties for you." And Plo Koon is like, "I freaking told you so, man." And then Anakin lets his attachments and his guilt pour out. He apologizes for letting her get taken and not being the helicopter parent he wants to be. And she's like, "Dude, you are the one that saved me. You trained me to be a freaking badass, and I saved 3 lives in the process. Thank you, Master. And they walk off together into the distance. The end.
And they do the almost hug thing that I know drives you nuts.
Oh,
they're gonna hug. No.
Yeah, I think if everybody else wasn't there, like, Anakin would have just been like, my baby, and like hugs her and smothers her, but everybody else was there and he can't because it's Jedi stuff. Right.
I only have one note for this outside of, like, this was just a kick-ass battle.
Yeah!
Just a kick-ass battle. It had every element of Star Wars battling, from kung fu fighting to laser play. Only no lightsabers. All lightsaber-free, but it's okay because there were Wookiees in the whole thing. But I thought it was interesting at the very end when Anakin shows up. There's a, like, you know, there's a really nice feel about it of where, like, Anakin's the weak one in this situation, you know?
That was my very last note.
Oh, really? He's the one, he's acting like, he's all emotional and like, oh, you know, it's all my fault. He's almost like C-3PO, you know? And she's just like, yeah, no, you did good work. It's all right, Skippy,
yeah.
go take 5. You know,
my very last note is Ahsoka is totally the parent in the final scene with
Anakin takes the weaker role, and that's a very rare thing. Even when he's weakening or when he's showing his Jedi weaknesses, he's still usually in control and kind of authoritarian. And this one, he's just broken down, you know. His emotions have obviously just gotten the best of him, and he's just a wreck. It's
you know,
great.
I wonder if it's because of the last few arcs, because, you know, because we had the Mortis arc, and Ahsoka almost died. And then, chronologically after that, we had the Citadel, and it's a very dangerous mission, and Ahsoka chose to go along. And then she gets kidnapped. So, like, I could see where, for him, he's just like, you know...
Here's the thing, in the Mortis arc, are usually, they're alongside each other.
Yeah.
And Anakin's there, and he's an egomaniac. Come on, you know. He's up his own ass. And so, like, if they're there fighting and all that and stuff goes wrong, he's going to, you know, feel responsible and stressed out about her because of his attachments. But this was even worse. He wasn't there. It was totally out. He had to totally let go control of it 100%. He wasn't there and couldn't even try to help her. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was just a situation. It's the control freak's greatest nightmare, and Anakin's one of the greatest control freaks of all time, you know? He control freaked himself right into being Darth Vader. So this one had to be extra hard on Anakin, because he just had, there was nothing that he could do but just wait and stress and fret.
Yeah. But what I like about it is, like, through these 3 dangerous missions, Ahsoka proved herself 3 different times in the last, like, 8 episodes?
Yeah.
I mean, Ahsoka proved herself over 8 episodes that she... It's kind of sad. She proved that she doesn't need him. You know? Like, yeah, she's still a Padawan. She's still learning.
That's the goal, though.
That's
the goal
of
teachers,
like,
parents, everything like that, you know?
But that's kind of also, like... kind of a bad thing for Anakin, because I think he's going to start realizing, like, oh, Ahsoka doesn't need me. Vader time.
Yeah. It's just part of it, but yeah. That's his trip, man.
Yeah. But it's definitely interesting to see, so. But, yeah. Ahsoka was the parent. She was the mom. It's kind of like that first time, like, you see your parents, like, really freak out, and you realize you're like, oh my god, I'm smarter than my parents in this one instant. You're just like, what do I do with myself? So, yeah, I always like things like that. For me, I just had a couple big notes and a couple little notes. Some of my little notes are, I thought it was cool to see legacy characters like General Tarful and Chewbacca again. It's always a nice callback to episode 3. Like we said.
Mm-hmm.
Do I have any other, like, little notes? No, okay, everything else is somewhat bigger. Okay, so starting from the top. It's a very mild criticism, like the smallest of criticisms. But, you know, Jinx did the Jedi mind trick on the lizard guy, right? Yes. I wish it was Ahsoka who did it. And
yes.
The only reason I wish it was, well, actually, there's two reasons. Because earlier in the season, in the episode with her and Rio Chuchi, we saw Ahsoka struggle with the Jedi mind trick. So it would have been nice to see at the beginning of the season she was struggling with it, and at the end of the season she got it down. But also, she's a more experienced than Jinx is. Like, he's only a youngling. She's a freaking Padawan.
Well, and, who was it? A Mandalorian that she was Jedi mind tricking in the last one? Who
was? There was two instances.
But
one,
they were guards. They were people that were they were like royal guards of some sort, if I recall right.
They were two different instances. One, it was on Mandalore, but the guards had been trained against it, so they made her think that she did it.
Right.
The other time with Rio Chuchi is when they were going against Newt Gunray's guys, and it was like the kind of gross looking guys. She actually succeeded, but she only let herself by, and Rio was like, I need to get by too, and she was just like, oh, sorry, I'm still learning, my friend needs to come too, and they're like, your friend needs to come too.
Yeah, and I had the same sort of thought. It would have been a nice, like, follow through to that, but I was thinking, maybe she might let him do this, because these lizard guys are kind of dumb anyway, and they're kind of dumb and primal. So they might be really easy to Jedi mind trick, so she might have just been letting him flex his muscles a little bit. I mean, if he failed, she could always done it, maybe. So maybe she was being a little teacher-like, you know?
It could have also been a thing of, like, I was, because Jinx was doing it, I was kind of half expecting Sniper just playing along and just being like, get them! I was playing along the entire time.
Yeah, no, I don't think these guys are that bright. No, I think these guys are really stupid and really easily manipulated.
But, like, if Ahsoka had done it, it would have cemented, like, yes, this worked.
Because it wasn't just, like, walk by or repeat a sentence. They had, this guy was doing, you know, this guy was, like, going right along with it, you know, through a whole, you
and
know,
that's
they,
why I thought
they probably
that
had to stand around there for 15, 20 minutes waiting for him to come, just like hanging out with that guy, like, yep.
Yeah, and that's why I kind of felt like they could have had it, played it to where the guy tricked him to make him think that Jinx did it, because they were there for so long and he played along with it so easily.
Yeah.
But I feel like if Ahsoka would have done it, it would have been cemented. But it would just been nice to, like, see, like, at the beginning of the season, like, she couldn't do it really well, and at the end of the season, it saved them, you know?
Yes.
It would have been a nice little arc for the season.
I agree.
I do really like the design of Lizards Prime's crib with all the stuffed heads and the different species hung up on the wall. It's really creepy and disgusting at the same time. It has that really gross edge to it. Because what made it, it's such a brief shot, but there's, like, a line of heads. And what made it really, really unnerving to see is these are all species that we have encountered before. The one that kind of got me and, like, you know, like, stuck in my brain is there's an Ithorian on the wall. You know, the guys with the, like, big, like, kind of hammerhead head, like, designs, and they speak out of the side of their head, and their mouths are on the side of their heads. That one stuck out to me because Ezra Bridger in Rebels has a friend on LaFall named Joe, and he's the guy who owns the bar that they get all their information from. So, like, what made that super unnerving is if you pause and look at all those species, we have a named character for every one of those species. You know, there's someone from the Star Wars universe we could place with their race. And so that made it, like, an extra layer of, like, disturbing and gross. Like, if you see a Twi'lek head, like, we know, like, Hera. You know, it could have been Hera, so, like, it's just, it made it, like, extra skeevy to me. But I really like that.
I mean,
it really, like, cemented how gross these guys were.
There's several times he's talking about how he's gonna skin Ahsoka. And, you know, in his mind, this whole thing ends up with him sitting at a table, like, dum-de-dum-de-dum, with Ahsoka laid out there, you know, like, cutting her skin off and, like, stretching it out up on his wall. Which is a horrific... horrific idea, you know?
Yeah. But I just really like that design, because it really cemented that final moment of, like, yeah, these people are trash. Yeah,
and then he grinds their bones to make his bread.
Ugh, probably. Or just uses it to pick his teeth. So I want to talk about the last couple of season finales for a second. Season 1 finale was the big three-part Ryloth shebang fight scene. Last scene was the Boba Fett arc, but it was still really big because we had Hondo and Aura Sing, and we were constantly hopping from planet to planet to planet. I would argue that this finale is a bit more of a quiet finale. We're really on one planet for a long period of time. And yeah, we had an opening battle last week on Florum or whatever the planet's called, but we were only there for a couple minutes. The rest of the finale is on this island. There's no huge, ginormous space battles. There's no planet invasions. And I think that's a pretty bold choice. I mean, they anchor it in legacy characters like Chewbacca, but this is a character finale, and this is Ahsoka checking in with the fans to show how far she's come. And they could have easily did the big old space battle with Anakin and Chewie and Yoda and Obi-Wan, but instead they chose to focus on their original character for Clone Wars. Well, they decided to show us how far that she's come over three seasons, and that's a really brave move on their part. And
it's established, but I mean, by this point in the series, I remember watching it. It was like, yeah, fair enough. We don't even need Chewie at this point. You know, these characters have earned their front and center status, you know, and I think it was maybe a simpler story than usually you would go for in a finale, but at the same time, over these two episodes with Filoni directing it, and just, you could tell there's an extra amount of production design and production work put into it, so it feels like a little mini Star Wars movie. They all sort of do, actually, but this one,
yeah.
This one's a little more intense on that, you know, the battles, it's very much filmed like a movie. It's very much like got a bit of extra effort put into it to go out with a bang, you know?
Yeah. And even then it feels more like, opposed to like a literal bang, it's very much more of a character bang.
Yeah.
And I thought it was just a very nice, brave choice, because they could have had, like I said, they could have had some massive space battles with, like, the entire cast, but they went with Ahsoka, with three very relatively new Padawans and Chewbacca to really anchor it in. And we didn't even, like you said, we didn't really need Chewbacca, so I just really loved that Filoni is confident enough. By the way, today is Dave Filoni's birthday. Oh. Even though this will come out like 3-4 weeks from now. So happy belated birthday, Dave Filoni. Thank you for giving us Clone Wars. So, and thank you for being a hero of mine and inspiring me with writing and directing. So thank you so much, Dave Filoni. Happy birthday.
Hey, Lucasfilm, you know what would be a good birthday present for Dave Filoni? His own Star Wars movie.
Yes, I kind of almost would like it to be an animated one. That'd be great.
Yeah, fine.
As long as it's not your first Clone Wars movie all over again. it's nice to see that Filoni has the confidence enough to do a finale like this. Because, like, this would have been just as good if they stuck it in the middle of the season. But I think being a finale, I think he did take extra care with it. And it's just nice to see that he is confident enough in Ahsoka's character by this point, three seasons in, that she can handle, as a character, a finale like this, and to show her growth and to show her progression. So I just thought that was a really awesome choice for this to be the final arc of the season.
I agree. It's definitely better at the end than, in stuck in the middle. And it's a strong end to an uneven season, too.
Yeah, the last, even though Mortis is pretty rough, like, the fact that it's consecutive and it's, like, chronological, the two arcs following it, it does work in the bigger, like, last nine episodes, because the last nine, with them being chronological, they build on each other. Like, you know, Mortis went into Citadel, went into this, and, like, so they built very well, opposed to, like, the first half of the season, where one takes place, but we have a season one storyline, followed by a season three storyline, going back to a season two storyline, going to a season three storyline, to a season one storyline. So, but like the last nine episodes, even with Mortis being a rough story, is very solid. It's a very solid ending. So, I approve. So Ahsoka's death count is rising.
Yeah.
She's knocked off two really big bad guys in the last two arcs. And what I really like about it is that she doesn't celebrate either death. It's not like when Anakin killed Tal Merrick back in Mandalore in Season 2. He was all smug about it, and he was just like, Why? He was going to blow up the ship. I had to kill him. Ahsoka doesn't smile. Like, when she looks over the railing down at Lizard Prime, she doesn't look happy. There's no celebration. No one's cheering. Not even the Wookiees. They just look up at her and she looks down at them. And that's the end of the fight. You know, and that's, I think that's a huge difference between her and Anakin. Especially in the last two arcs, when Anakin was chatting with Tarkin about wanting to do what is necessary in the war, Ahsoka did what was necessary to survive, but it did not feel good to her.
That's what makes her more Jedi than Anakin. That's what makes Anakin not very Jedi.
Yeah.
He's and liking so all the stuff he's not supposed to like.
Yeah, and so I thought that was a nice, because it could have been a very, like, big, like, you know, Lizard Prime falls over a ship, and, like, everybody was like, yay, we did it, we're free. No one celebrated at all. And I just thought that was, I think the silence of that moment was more powerful than if they had been cheering in happiness. Like, that silence, I think that death, like, these deaths, especially from, like, Sobek last arc, and then now Lizard Prime at this arc, those deaths are starting to toll up on Ahsoka, and I think they're starting to weigh on her. She's still, like, she's probably 15 by now.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing's really tragic. It's really all about, like, well, who knows how many people have died on that planetoid, but, like, you know, it's all about, like, dead kids that were killed for nothing, you know?
Yeah. I mean, again, like we said last week, this is an arc about human trafficking.
Yeah.
So, and
just about wasting life just for the it's kind of about trophy hunting.
Yeah. So, and his elephant fell on him.
Yes.
About time.
It was a big Wookiee elephant. Bantha. His Bantha fell on him.
His Bantha fell on him. And my last note is, while Anakin's not in this arc a lot, it's really great to get some insight to his issues, because he all but loses, and we talked about this already before, I guess, but he lost it when Ahsoka is taken, and he's clearly guilty over it. But the first thing he does is apologize when he sees her. Like, slowly but surely, like, we're seeing Anakin's character's weaknesses, and it's showcasing his downfall. And though his love and attachment is against the Jedi way, the Jedi get their asses handed to them in Episode 3. So his attachments aren't entirely a bad thing. But the thing is, I think that's different, is he passes that love and that attachment to Ahsoka. And I think that's what allows her to live later, is because she takes, like, those moments, and she's like, you know what, this is better, like, you know, and she walks, and she has these moments with Anakin where he was just, you know, thankful and grateful and liked having her around, and I think that's what helps her in the end.
In the end.
In bread. Well, that's all I have for Act 3.
You want me to score it up?
Score it up, Chris.
I love the hell out of this episode. Yes. It's just all Star Wars all the way. I love both episodes. I love the whole story, this whole story arc. I liked this episode better because, let's face it, it was a big fight. And this time, the last one, it was, everything was tilted in the Transdoshan's direction. This time with Chewbacca in the mix, all of a sudden it's time to get aggressive, and they do, and it's just, it's shot like a Star Wars movie. It feels like a Star Wars movie. It's just, I just was, you know, I was kind of giddy through the whole thing. The only thing that was distracting me was not even really anything to do with the episode itself. It was the fact that I was trying to figure out where the commercials came in so I could take my notes. But other than that, I was just like, yeah, go. Chewie's, you know Chewie's not going to die, so you know Chewie's just going to maul a whole bunch of lizard people. And by this time, you want to see those lizard people get mauled.
Yeah.
And, you know, I this is one of my highest scores. This is definitely going to show up in my top list. I'm giving this a 9. A 9.
Wow.
Yeah.
Hey.
I love it. Love it, love it, love it.
Have you had a 10 for 10 episode yet?
I haven't had a 10 for 10 yet.
Okay, I think I've had one, which was the deserter.
10 for 10, like, 10 is, like, almost unachievable. I try to keep that in the range of my scoring. 10 being, like, unbelievably...
The prime example of Clone Wars.
Yeah, or not even Clone Wars, Star Wars. I'm going to say this. I might not score a 10 till sometime into Rebels.
Oh.
You know what I'm saying? So it's the 10 is a 10 is a pretty high milestone, and you have to really, like, blow my mind to
I
get
think
the...
I have two episodes in Rebels off the top. No, three episodes in Rebels off the top of my head that are probably 10 for 10.
That's what I'm saying. Rebels has hit some really high bars. And I know I shouldn't be, like, actually figuring that into Clone Wars, but, you know, whether I want to or not, it's in my brain, so...
I'm curious now, what if you had to pick an episode or two of Rebels that's your 10 for 10, what would you claim it as right now?
Oh, geez, it's a... There's two of them.
I have three that are out for me that I would be like, yes.
There's two of them, and they both involve Darth Vader. The one where Darth Vader first shows up and just starts kicking ass. I think it's towards... Is that the end? Towards the end of season one or two?
That's the season one finale.
Yeah, the season one finale is pretty amazing. And then I think the season two finale is the one with Ahsoka, right? In the Sith Temple. That one too. That one is slightly edging out the first one. But, And also, I was thinking about those two episodes, especially the first one where Darth Vader came back. And remember, we were talking about that after we saw it, and we were like, man, it's good to see Darth Vader back as a frightening character.
Yeah.
And that made me realize that was, like, well over a year before Rogue Squadron.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking now... When I'm watching these Filoni cartoons, you're going to be picking up... We've already picked up stuff from the next two Star Wars movies, probably, and Rebels, and we don't even know it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's probably elements that they put in there that are going to show up. And they don't even have to be, you know, like a character or something, but just... I mean, that scene in Rebels was basically like a trial run for the scene at the end of Rogue One where Vader just tears his way through that hallway. They both basically served the same purpose. And people freaked out in Rogue One because I don't think everybody watches Rebels. You know, I think there's a subset that watch the Rebels and Clone Wars and stuff, so... And Rogue One, it's sort of a new thing, but, like, it already happened in the cartoon. So I'm going to be watching Rebels and whatever comes after Rebels very closely and know that there's probably... That, yes, this stuff is going to factor into the movies somehow.
Yeah.
And have relevance in it. So, yeah, 9 out of 10. I could get up into the 9.75s or something in But as a matter of principle, it's hard to give out tens for me.
I have to say, if I had to pick some possible 10 episodes out of Rebels, mine would also be Twilight of the Princess, which is the two-parter with Ahsoka and Vader and Maul. I would need to go back and rewatch it again, but the episode that's from Kallus's point of view, as him as a secret agent... Mm. Because that's the first time we really get to see the insides of the Empire. Like, really detailed insides of the Empire. And, like, Thrawn's there, and Kallus is awesome, and that just, like, being able to see that was amazing.
And you're seeing it from the point of view of an Imperial who's not a caricature. He's a human, you know? He's got, like, some credibility, and he's not, like, a pure villain, you know? So, yeah, that was a really good episode, yeah.
And the other one I would have to say, because I really need to rewatch it, mostly just because, I've said it before on the show, I'm not an Ezra fan, but, like, after reading, like, reviews and hearing other people talking about it, I really want to rewatch it. Twin Sons with Obi-Wan and with old Obi-Wan and Maul and Ezra.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a possible one. I really need to go back and rewatch it. But, like, I have a lot more appreciation for it than I did initially for it.
The initial watching of it. Yeah, that's one that's going to get stronger upon multiple viewings.
Yeah, so that's a possible one. But definitely Twilight of the Apprentice, and I would possibly say the Kallus episode, just because it was so groundbreaking to see the Empire from the inside. And to see how they're pretty much trying to Highlander each other. Like, they were just, like, if I take her out, I'll have her position, and then she's just like, if I take the person above me out, I can have his position. You know, they're pretty much Highlandering each other. So it's really interesting to see how within the Empire, how they work and how there are these different layers of people that they're just trying to move on up to the east side of Thrawn. So that's my other possible 10 episode.
And by the same token, though, it would be really hard for me to get. Something would have to be so horrible. An episode would have to be so horrifyingly horrible to give it a 1. You know what I mean? It's very hard for me to give out a 1 or a 10. They have to really deserve it.
Yeah, Mortis might be it. Because, like, a lot of early Rebels episodes are a little rough, but it's just a lot of it is just they're trying to find their stride. But they still have the character stuff there.
Nothing's... A 1 episode would make me angry. And none of there's things that made me grumpy about Mortis and stuff like that. But and on a curve, yeah, it's not good. But it wasn't making me like, rah, God, I hate this, you know?
Yeah.
I just didn't like.
Yeah. So, well, as always, we love to hear your feedback. Oh no, I need to score my episode.
Oh yeah, we don't know what just you. Kidding. I know because I'm looking at your score, but
yeah. Don't sorry. Know. The episode. So to put this in a little bit of context, episode last week, I scored an 8. I scored an 8 out of 10 for last week. Thinking about it, I think I liked last week's episode just the tiniest little touch better. Huh. Just tiniest little touch. And then a lot of that is because, you know, with me, I love character stuff over plot anytime. So I think last week was Ahsoka stepping up into the leadership role. This week, she was just really acting on it. So last week was her big step up. And so I like seeing that a little bit more when she realizes that she needs to lead this group. Still at the end of the day, this is a really great episode. There's a lot of great fights. It's fun seeing Chewbacca and Tarful again. And we get to bring them into the Clone Wars. And we also get more insight on Anakin. And while it might not be satisfying to Ahsoka, it's really super satisfying to see Lizard Prime fall to his death.
Yeah, he was an asshole.
I was super happy with that. So I gave last week an 8 out of 10. This week is a 7.75 out of 10. Huh. Just a tiny spit down. Just a tiny bit. Tiny, tiny. Tiny, tiny. So... as always, we would love to hear your feedback from iTunes or Twitter or on the Two True Freaks Facebook page. Before we jump into the main feedback, I just wanted to say that we got a tweet liked by James Arnold Taylor, who is Obi-Wan's voice actor.
Really?
Because James Arnold Taylor has started this really cool new YouTube series called... what is it called? Fuck, I don't have my internet open. But pretty much I'm going to talk as I look this up. This new YouTube series is where he pretty much is just talking Clone Wars. And he just talks about Clone Wars and the aspects of Clone Wars from his point of view as a voice actor. And the very first episode is called, I think, The Jedi and the Duchess. And he has Anna Graves on his show, who's the voice of Satine. So for 20 minutes, they just talk about Obi-Wan and Satine and their characters and who they are as people and how, like, what the things that went into voicing them and like what like went into behind that and stuff like that. Let me see if I can pull up this tweet right fast. But yeah, that's pretty much. Let's see, where is it? Where is it? Where is it? I'm in Farkin episodes. Farkin. It's called Clone Wars Conversations, and the first episode is called The Duchess and the Jedi. I don't know if this is a weekly series or a monthly series or what, but like, there's really amazing 8-bit animation that goes on with this as well. They hired an artist to do all the animation for it. So yeah, the first episode is just James Arnold Taylor and Anna Graves talking about Satine and Obi-Wan.
We'll have to remember when we post this to put a link up underneath when we post this on Facebook.
Well, we'll remember it now because you're saying it. Just yes, remind me and I'll
right.
send you a link.
I'll be editing this going, yes.
Yes, when you edit this, just let me know and I'll send you a link to it. But it's a really good listen. It's like a 20-minute little thing that he's doing now. And it's just really, I personally love seeing things like that because I love when actors and creators engage with fans. A lot, some actors and creators do, some actors and creators don't. Both are okay because, you know, people have their own lives. They can do what they want. But yeah, I think to me, like, it really enhances the fandom. Like, for example, like, Sam Witwer, who's the voice of Darth Maul, he has his own fucking Star Wars podcast. He's on a Star Wars podcast that...
Also realize these guys are professionals, and that's a way to build your fan base. And, you know, these guys go to conventions and stuff, you know. They're working with their fans, and they're creating fodder for when they go into public, so you have something to talk to them about, you know?
Yeah.
Which is nice, instead of just plopping yourself down there and being grumpy and charging $50 for an autograph or something, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like when Jason Isaac was at Dragon Con this last time around. He was the voice of the Grand Inquisitor in Rebels, and he said in one of his things, he was like, I don't want to talk about Star Wars. I don't know anything about Star
Wars.
Right,
that's what I'm saying. If these guys didn't care about actually their roles in Clone Wars, they wouldn't be doing stuff like this, you know?
Yeah, it just kind of reminds me, like, I haven't watched a lot of Supernatural, but I was told about an episode where, like, some sort of, like, magical person, like, could see the lives of Sam and Dean, the protagonists, and so she wrote it into a book. And so the guys end up at a convention that's about them, where they have fans. And people are looking at them like, oh, your Sam and Dean costume are terrible. And they're like, what do you mean? But it's just a huge nod that the creators did to the fans. They're like, you know, we listen, we love you, we hear you, we appreciate you. So I really like when actors and creators do things like that. I think it's a really cool thing. So yeah, James Arnold Taylor has a new YouTube series called Clone Wars Conversations. And the reason he liked our tweet, because I tagged him in it, and I was just like, this is a really cool thing, check it out, and he liked our tweet. So, yes, so make sure you check it out. It's a really cool, and Anna Graves is so lovely, and she's just a lovely and adorable. So, but this week's feedback comes from our Two True Freaks Facebook page for our episode, Altar of Mortis. So, take it away, Chris.
Yeah, the first one comes from filthy Mortis Arc apologist and lover, Patrick Delamore, who says, what was the point? I thought it was fun. Isn't Star Wars supposed to be fun? If the whole show is this story all the time, it would be throwaway. I think the writers saw what didn't work and improved it later on. The final arc of the show does a much better job of telling this kind of story and linking to both trilogies.
You know, I can kind of see where he's going here, because I think...
Mortis lover.
I think with this episode, if we didn't have Mortis...
Squeaky-voiced Mortis lover.
We might not have gotten Bindu. And the reason I say that is because this is all experimental. Like, it's a big experiment episode. If you think it works, great. If you don't think it works, like Chris and me, that's great, too. I mean, so, like, this was them being experimental. It wasn't really successful in our eyes, but at the same time, like, I think they took a lot of things that they learned here and applied that later on, and that's why we have characters like Bindu. So I can see where he's getting at in this, Mortis lover.
Yep. All right, we got another one here from Brian Weber. Says, the problem with the Mortis trilogy is that it really works better as its own story rather than sandwiched in the middle of the Clone Wars. I could see how maybe it would work better as, like, a three-issue comic or something. It's too radical a change from how the rest of the episodes are told. Yep. At the same time, the extremity of the fantasy elements also lets the watcher know just how little we know of George's vision of the Force. That's true. We had always heard Yoda's line, luminous beings are we, not this crude matter. Oh, crude. Mortis just took that to a new level. Yeah, I guess you could say that. As an extra note, Hope was stretching for some symbolism in these episodes, and it made me think of another tie-in.
Yes, I was.
The whole arc symbolizes the original trilogy. The first episode can just easily be a standalone, just like A New Hope had to be. The second episode ended with a tragedy and had some interesting fight scenes. The final episode shows a redemption and the destruction of evil. And as the new trilogy might be showing us, the victory might be a greater cost than we knew. Yeah, maybe it did, but not in a way that made me think it was really awesome or cool. Or you know what I mean? They might have actually put that like the way you put it. It's like, yeah, they might actually have done that. Still doesn't make it work for me.
They might have. It's one of those things that they were like, let's do this like in the writer's room, but it didn't. The application of it didn't work.
Yeah. No.
No, it's time for my favorite part of the show.
And like, I don't know how this works because I'm in the same state as Dario, and you're in Georgia, but and knowing Dario, he sent yours like 2 days earlier and then sent mine. But either way, like, or he has really good mail karma. But we got a package. We both got our package from Dario today. I was riding my bike away to go to the do my chores. I was going to the bank and I can't remember where else I was going. I was riding away with my bike and I saw the postman and I saw a little square box in his hand. He was heading towards my house and I'm like, I wonder if that little square box is for me. And then I came home and it was sitting on my front steps and it's chock full of candy from Dario. And here's the dealio. I'm a little whiny little baby and I won't make my baby noise because it creeps out Hope. Anyway, that's my little Voldemort, like.
That's how I talk to my cats. I'm just like, hey!
Two cats are all looking at the speakers right now. But I was whining about how crappy American Kit Kats were, and Dario being a jet-setting traveler, flight attendant, has been sending us candy from around the world ever since then for us to... And, you know, instead of just eating it like hogs, we're going to share it with you guys and make you wish you were eating it along with us.
I'm not going to lie.
What's that?
I'm not going to lie. This is the Regina brand. I want to do this tonight because I'm a huge Once Upon a Time fan, and one of the characters' names is Regina. And I was like, I want to eat the queen.
I like Regina because it sounds like Orangina, which is one of my favorite drinks. But,
I don't know if I like this one.
Well, I don't know. I haven't opened mine yet. He sent us a note, and it says, Regina, Little Queen, is from one of the oldest candy companies in Portugal and has a passion fruit filling.
It doesn't really have a filling. It tastes like the chocolate is made of passion fruit.
Oh.
Which is why I don't know if I like it or not.
I don't know if I've ever had passion fruit, so I don't know.
I have. Passion fruit is very hit and miss with me. I either really like it or I really don't.
Mm.
And I think it makes the chocolate just a touch too, like, fruity sweet.
It's flowery.
Yeah, almost. I don't know if I like this or not because it's
like actual flour, like flower, not flour, but.
Oh, see, yeah, like roses. I think that's what I like. I liked it initially, but the more I eat it, the more like perfumey it tastes in my mouth.
It definitely has that perfumey taste, which isn't big with me either, unless it's like Sometimes ginger will have a little bit of that perfumey taste, but it also has a little funk.
I love ginger.
I could just chew on ginger. I love the flavor of ginger, but I shouldn't. Yeah,
why should you?
I gotta say, Dario, this one isn't my cup of tea.
Yeah.
But
why don't you like ginger? Why shouldn't you eat ginger?
It just doesn't. It's not that I shouldn't like it. Disagrees with me. It's not the kind of flavor that I usually like.
Mm.
Like, anything... A lot of those heavily, like, ginger, coconut... I've never been a big... I'm starting to warm on coconut now in my old age. But I never liked coconut. Any of the sort of rosy, flowery sort of flavored things never did much for me.
That was the same way. Like, I hated coconut when I was a kid, but now that I'm older, I'm just like, oh, this is nice.
I'm starting to appreciate coconut, yes, but and ginger was right in there, but like I love drinks with ginger in them.
Oh, ginger tea is like my go-to sick tea.
They make this stuff here. I don't know if they sell it. You have to go to like hippie, you know, commune type stores to get it, you know, the health food stores to get it, but I can't remember what the name of it is, but it's like this super, it's basically sort of like the strongest, it's like an apple juice with as much ginger as they can cram into it, you know.
That's amazing.
And it's the kind of thing that if you feel a cold coming on, it's like, I'll go get myself a little, you know, and it's like a little 6-ounce bottle, and it's, you can't drink it all at once because the ginger is so strong.
Oh my God, send me a bottle of that. That sounds amazing.
Ginseng is another one. I like the flavor. I actually like the flavor of ginseng, even though it's this weird, like, I can't even describe what it is. It's almost plasticky.
Mm-hmm.
But I love it.
My favorite ginger tea is, if you go to adagio.com, it's adagio.com. They have, Adagio is a cool website where you can make your own fandom blends, and you can make your own tea blends, pretty much. Somebody, if you go up to the search and you type in Cumberbatch, they've made there was one movie that where Benedict Cumberbatch was blonde, so the tea's called something like Ginger Batch or the Benedict or something like that. But it has a little drawing of redhead ginger Benedict Cumberbatch on it. It's 3 times ginger tea with masala chai in it.
Oh, wow.
That is my go-to sick tea, because I take a sip of that and I'm like, I can breathe forever.
Yeah.
It's my go-to sick tea, and I love it. Like, it's one of my favorite teas. I only save it for when I get sick, because I'm like, I can't breathe. Oh, I can breathe now. Let me drink all the tea. But Adagio is a really cool website, because you can also, like, make your own fandom blends. You can make it for any fandom. My buddy, Kara, that's how she kind of got her start, that she made all these Sherlock blends. And the BBC Sherlock crew found out about it. So they're like, they bought an entire case of all her teas, and they actually drank it on set, and Kara died because she was really excited about it. She was like, oh my God, they're drinking my tea.
It's better than suing her, that's for sure.
Yeah, unlike Marvel, because she also made an Avengers blend, and Marvel was like, no.
Cease and desist. Yep.
So she couldn't use the names. Like, she ended up changing all the names. Like, the Her Loki tea became something like The Brother or something. Like, yeah. She couldn't actually use their actual names. But the Benedict crew, like, the Sherlock crew was totally down for it. They thought it was the coolest thing in the world that someone was making teas in their likeness. So, but yeah, Adagio is a really cool little website. There's Star Wars blends on there. You just have to look into the fandom blends. And some are better than others and stuff. My buddy Anthony makes a lot of Once Upon a Time teas. I helped him design a few. Like, I designed the Will Scarlet tea for him because, God knows, I love Michael Sacca. So, who's in a new TV show, and they're filming right now.
What are the candies again in Harry Potter that have all the different flavors, and some of them are horrible?
Bird Spot's Every Flavor Beans?
Yeah, somebody, they should make a tea like that, where every once in a while you get one that tastes like a swamp.
Kara made one for Peter Pettigrew for a Harry Potter blend. It tastes like pants. Like, not even like, you know, fabric. It tastes like you've sweated into your pants, and it has that sweat smell, and you just take the crotch of your sweaty pants and you just put it in your mouth. It tastes nasty.
See, at first I was like, whoa, how do they do that? But then I started thinking about it. There's some spices you can, if you're cooking pork right, sometimes pork, like, you pull pork out and it's cooking, if it has the right spices on it, this is so gross. It smells like a big, fat, sweaty guy. What I mean? It smells like you're at the gym. And not even. It smells like somebody who's, like, at the gym, it's just sweat. You know, most of the people are clean at the gym. This smells like just like a sweaty, like the sweaty, dirty super at your apartment building or something.
Like you go into Comic-Con as the guy who hasn't showered in 4 days.
Yes. And some, yeah, so I guess it's totally possible.
Yeah, I mean, but there's some, like, her... Kara did one, and it was her Sherlock tea, and she used Lapsang, which is a very smoky tea, and you drink it, and it tastes like you're drinking smoke, and it's amazing. Like, I absolutely love Lapsang. I think it's really strong. You do have to mix it with other stuff, or it's gonna overpower you, but like Sherlock in the canon. The classic canon, the book canon, was a smoker. Like, he always had his pipe and stuff like that. So it was interesting that her Sherlock blend tasted like smoke.
Oh, or it should taste like cocaine.
That's true, too. I don't think Adagio would let that one slip.
Don't think that's going to slip under the radar, yeah.
But, yeah, there's all sorts of things. Like, my buddy Anthony did a bell for Beauty and the Beast, and it tasted like... like cream roses, and it was beautiful. It was delicious. It was like a cream rosy flavor. So,
it's like lion sweat.
Yeah, check out Adagio. So it's adagio.com. So adagio.com, and find your fandom blends. It's fun. Well, where can people find you, Chris?
You can find me at twotruefreaks.com, where I just saw just the other day that the first episode of Get Back to Wrestling has been put up. They put up an episode before, but that was episode zero. Now the official first episode is up. Mike Zumo is going strong and posting episodes and settled all in with his Man of Screen podcast. And
so
we're just
Aaron.
cranking out podcasts. Scott Gardner and I, I'm working on one that I recorded with Scott Gardner and I. And
Aaron, too. Aaron's been putting out Tangents Abound like crazy.
I think Aaron, Mike Zumo, and Scott McGregor at this moment might be talking Wonder Woman.
Ooh.
Yep, and Scott McGregor and I have a 5-minute freak out on Wonder Woman, where a spoiler-free one, where we went to see it and then we went to Five Guys and ate some delicious burgers. Talked about the movie. Is it a positive review, negative review? Gotta go and find out. But
well, judging by our opening, I know you probably had a positive review.
What's that?
Judging by our opening where we talked about
Wonder Woman. I did have a generally positive review, yes. And let's see, what else? We got a Facebook page, Two True Freaks on Facebook, and the Two True Freaks Cantina. And then there, you know, Back to the Bins has a page. Fear the Walking Dead cast has a page. All sorts of other guys have a page. I got one for Garage Sale Gloat. So you can do that. You can go to Twitter to see what we're putting out. Gene, the podcasting machine, runs our Two True Freaks at Twitter account. Gene. And that's about all the Two True Freaks in this. You can find me if you're crafty. You might even find my profile on Facebook, which is not under my name, but if you're a little detective, you can find me and be friends with me. What about you, Hope? Sure. You go out there right out under your own name and stuff, all brave like.
You actually had a fake birthday recently.
Yeah, I'm trying to fix... I can't figure out how to get into my Facebook and shut birthdays off. I don't even like people bugging me on my fake birthday. I'm going to shut that down pretty soon, because that people are just like, all right, well, his fake birthday sort of goes the same day of the year, so it's once a year, so we'll just get him then. So, although there were a couple good pictures of me back from my high school days. If you see of the people posted on my fake birthday, which are pretty amusing.
Well, you can find me at JGuysAndJedi on Twitter. I run our Twitter account. You can also find me at Hope Molinex. I'm also the news writer for What the Fangirl. Oh my god, I'm so far behind on everything. I haven't really done a lot lately just because I've been really busy.
You've got a book to write.
I am writing a book. I was just about to say that. Like, before this, Chris and I were talking about, and I'm, like, this close to finishing volume one of my first draft of my novel, and then I have volume two to start writing, which will probably take another year to write, because this one took about a year to write. But yeah, like, I'm very close, so I haven't really been dedicating a lot to What the Fangirl, just because I've been busy and I'm job hunting, which also takes up a lot of time. So... but definitely check us out at With the Fangirl. We're doing some good stuff there. As soon as I get a chance to sit down and do it, I'm sitting on three interviews from 221bcon back in April that I need to get out there. One is with Martin Powell, who is an Eisner Award-winning writer. I talked to Lindsay Fay, who's one of my very good friends and also a author herself. So like I'm sitting on some like really cool stuff, and one of Lindsay's shows got picked up for a television show, one of her books did. So, but it's still in the works. They're still talking it over. It's nothing official yet. But yeah, I mean, check us out over at whatthefangirl.com and at Hope Molinex and at JGuysAndJedi on Twitter, and come say hi. We'll be happy to see you. I never really get to mention it because it's not like feedback, but I have to say Aaron does always send us like some cute pictures on Twitter and stuff like that of like, you know, Ahsoka or Jedi, and he'll send me fan art on Twitter, and it's really nice, and I do see them, Aaron. I just don't always remember to reply. But thank you for always sending us great little fan art snippets on Twitter, because I see that and I think I like them a lot. I just always forget to write back because I'm really bad at stuff like that. So yeah. But yeah, I guess that's it. Join us next week. Oh, our season finale recap is next week.
Yes.
oh, that's going to be interesting, because this is a really weird finale.
Get your Rexvolution ready. It's going to be an interesting one.
Oh, my God. It's going to be really interesting. You have a lot of nothing. This is a very Rex-light season. Wait till season 4 when we have the 4 Umbara episodes. I'm going to be like, and then they walked up a hill, and then he looked at Fives, and Fives was just like, hey, bro, and he was all like, hey, bro, and they're like, let's go kill Krill, yeah! Like, it's going to be crazy. But yeah, I don't really know yet what I'm going to do for the Rex Evolution, but I guess I should look at that earlier, because this is a really weird season, so it's going to be an interesting feedback.
It's going to be an interesting wrap-up, that's for sure.
I'm debating, should we split it into two, like do like a first half of the season and the second half of the season? Cause...
Oh, I don't know if this season merits having it twice as more.
I don't mean as like two episodes, but in the course of the wrap up, doing like, let's look at the first half of the season, then let's look at the second half of the season.
We might want to split it up into the good stuff and the bad stuff.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. We'll look
at
it.
Yeah, I have to go back over my notes to see how it all played out exactly.
Because you didn't have really any grievous this season except for in one episode.
And even still, it was still like pretty light grievous. It was just a drop in. So, yeah.
So, we'll have to see. We'll see. We'll figure it out. But come back next week to see what we figure out.
That's what they do every week.
I know. So
and
I guess
somehow we always figure something out.
Yeah, we figure it out. So, but I guess until next time, let the Wookiees rain from the sky and kill all the lizard people. And don't hunt your friends. They are not your friends. Like in a Harry Potter musical, they say killing people doesn't make people your friends. They just make them dead.
That just makes them your dead friends. If you shop at Amazon.com, please consider using the link at twotruefreaks.com to shop there. If you use this link to go to Amazon and then you shop, Two True Freaks gets a little cut of what you buy, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. So you get to shop as usual and help out the Two True Freaks at the same time.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks. If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
Two True Freaks has been brought to you today by Damanzo Core of Milan, Italy, and by the letters F and U.